Hello, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors 2.0. On today's show, I have filmmaker Jennifer Westcott, who talks about her new animated film, Elliot, the Littlest Reindeer. And it's got a great cast featuring some of the finest comedians, including Samantha Bee, Martin Short, and John Cleese. We talk about what it was like going from a live-action background to the animation world and how she blends a sports film with a holiday Christmas movie. You'll also hear from the band The Lucky Ones, who talk about their new album, Better Late Than Never. And I'm going to start with a track off of Better Late Than Never. This is the song Shout, and it features Shohei Shiraishi. That was the song Shout by The Lucky Ones featuring Shohei Shiraishi. And you'll hear from vocalist of The Lucky Ones, Steve Stumble, a little later on in the show. But right now, this is my interview with filmmaker, writer, and director of Elliot, the Littlest Reindeer. Here is my conversation with Jennifer Westcott. Jennifer Westcott, hello. Thanks for being here this morning.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So you have a new animated film out, Elliot, the Littlest Reindeer.
I do.
There's always been a market for Christmas movies and always a market for animated films, and this hits both of those. What does this, in terms of maybe the traditional Christmas movie, what do you think this film does differently in terms of its story that it tells? You're right.
I'll just start the answer again. Is that
Yeah. Cool? Yeah, that's cool.
Okay. Well, it's a sports movie, first of all. So it kind of adds that different spin on just the standard Christmas tale. So it's got like an underdog kind of feel to it. So I think that's what makes it really a little bit different.
There's a great cast, voice cast involved with this movie. You got Josh Hutcherson, Samantha Bee, John Cleese, Martin Short, Jeff Dunham, Marina Bakarin. In terms of directing voices and directing an animated movie, how does that process work for you in directing all these different people who may or may not be in the same room together at any one time?
Yeah, so none of them were in the same room at the same time. I come from a live action background, so I'm used to having all the actors in one place, but it was a bit of an adjustment getting used to just having that one-on-one situation. But it was pretty awesome in the end, because you can focus so much on the performance of each and every line. So that was like really, really awesome. I really liked that part of it. And then obviously our cast was just so good. They were so amazing, so professional. They brought so much to each character. It was a dream. It was amazing. I loved it.
Why do you think a lot of, you know, comedians, you know, especially somebody like John Cleese or even Martin Short and Sam Bee, who are known for perhaps their quote unquote edgy material, or in some cases blue, they work blue.
Yeah.
And yet they really enjoy doing sort of these types of kid friendly movies. As a director and as someone who's now worked with these people, do you think you know why that is? So the plot of the movie says that Blitzen announces his retirement, and it's Elliot has to try out. When you think of all the names of Santa's reindeer, Blitzen's not necessarily the first one that comes to mind. I'm curious as to why you made the choice that it was Blitzen that was going to retire, as opposed to the more famous Rudolph or one of the other ones.
Well, we're not allowed to use Rudolph because it's copyrighted.
Oh, I see.
We really only have the eight, yeah. And then in the movie, this is a tiny bit of a spoiler, but not too much. Some of the other ones have already retired. So Vixen retired in the 50s because she wanted to go raise a family. Comet retired in the 60s because he's a bit of a space cadet and he wants to go find himself. So Blitzen was one of the last ones left. So
Fair enough.
So we ended up with him.
Fair enough. So how you say you come from a live action background, excuse me, apart from what we talked about earlier about not having anybody there in the same room together, did your approach to directing the material change at all, given that this is an animated film?
I mean, the basics of just wanting to tell a good story obviously just stayed the same. But there is a lot. It was a big adjustment switching to animation. Just the whole process. It's kind of backwards to live action because you really make the film in the storyboard process in animation. So you have to make all the decisions about shots. You have to make all the decisions about the edit. You have to make all these decisions ahead of time before you even talk to your actors. So that was kind of weird getting used to it. But I really like it now. Now I'm like, oh, if I go back to live action, I'm definitely going to spend a lot more time on storyboarding, a lot more time on less time relying on coverage, which is like getting so many shots in each scene. I'm kind of losing my train of thought here. Oh, how is it different? Yeah, that was basically it. Yeah, you kind of make it's a backwards process compared to live action.
It also strikes me that making an animated film is a much longer and more drawn-out process than a live-action film, just from the creation and the editing standpoint. How was that for you, being with a project for a much longer period of time than maybe one is used to?
Yeah, it's kind of like a day job. So when you're shooting, my first movie was a live-action little micro budget that we shot in 10 days in a garage in Mission, BC. So it was very long hours. It was like very intense, very crazy. Whereas an animated film like Little Reindeer took 4 years. And it's more of a day job. Like, you don't work these crazy, insane hours all the time. Otherwise, you'd go, you'd burn out. But you have a lot more time with the story. You have a lot more time to catch mistakes. You have a lot more time to catch plot holes. So that part was really good. And I think that's why so many animated movies are so good. It's because they have so much time to really iron out all the problems, So, yeah.
You mentioned the attention that you play to sort of storyboarding and the shots and all that. How involved are you in the actual editing process, post-production process for either the live action or an animated film? Are you there in the room with the editor? Do you how do you craft that?
So the editor will usually do their first draft. They just do their first cut by themselves. I don't have any input into that. But then from that point on, I'm sitting with them, working with them. I mean, with the animated movie, I was in Victoria and our editor was in Toronto, so we would do a lot of Skype sessions. And pretty involved, pretty much. Like, and it's very fine detailed. Like, do we cut half a second earlier? Do we cut half a second later? Like, it's little picky work.
How do you find that in terms of cutting and splicing and being exact? Do you think that animation give you more or less room in that regard? Do you think, or does it not necessarily matter all that much?
Well, you have less options in animation, because in live action you'll shoot, like you'll do wide shots, medium shots, close-up shots. You do so many shots of every single line in the movie. So then you have so much more to choose from in the edit. But because animation, you don't want to waste, you don't get to do that. You don't do, we'll do a wide, we'll animate this in a wide, and then we'll animate this in a medium, and then we'll see what we like. That's not, you make that choice ahead of time. And if you change your mind, it costs money. Like, you've got to go back and redo it again. So it's much more particular, but it has made me a way better director. It's like just thinking about every single detail has really been very beneficial.
We mentioned that, you've got sports, but this is also inherently a Christmas movie. Why has there always been such a good, steady market for Christmas movies? Every year, there's always a couple of good ones that come out among the myriad of other Christmas movies that there are. Why is this still such a good genre or market for both the filmmaker and for the fans?
Break, and I think you want stuff to do with your family, right? And Christmas movies, going to the theater or renting a movie, or is always a good, solid, steady source of entertainment for families. I'm assuming that's what it is. Yeah. I think that's what we do with our kids.
And I know I'm just looking here at your resume. I know you have a couple other projects in the works in the future. And I'm intrigued about your next one because to do a complete 180 from an animated family film to go to a horror film. What can you tell us about Cut and what prompted you to get into the corpses and zombies line of work?
Cut's actually, we've been working on Cut for a while. I'm still rewriting the script for that one. So it's I had actually written the script for Cut before when we started the Little Premiere. So it's not necessarily going to be our next one. I am working on another animated script. It's just we're seeing whichever one catches on first, and we can sell first to get the funding for it first.
Now I know
they're comedic, right? Like Cut is a comedy as well. Right. It's not just a straight up slasher. Like it has similar elements to the other movies I do, in that it's some funny bits.
And I know one more film that I see you're listed is Bed Bugs, A Love Story, and that takes a look at romance. Anything you can tell us about about that project?
That one's a similar situation as Pet. We've been working on it for a long time, trying to set it up. And it's, again, a romantic comedy that I started writing. We lived in Texas for a year, and I started writing it down there. And yeah, it's pretty fun. I hope we get that one going. It'd be great, because it's just a light, fun thing to do.
And aren't
we'll
you...
see. Like, you never know.
And isn't the actress who's starring in it, wasn't she also the star of your first film?
Brittany Wilson, yeah. She's in, she plays a supporting role. She's cast for a supporting role in Bedbugs. And then, yeah, she was in Locked in a Garage Band, too. She's wonderful. I'm actually writing a script of her now, too. Pretty awesome.
As a filmmaker, what's it like for you to have, you know, one or two or three people, whether it's actors or crew that you know that you can rely on and consistently work with, you know, through a variety of projects in a variety of genres in a variety of ways?
It's pretty great. It's, it's so intense making movies, right? Like, it's stressful and it's fun and it's, like, there's a whole emotional thing that you go through while you're making them. It's nice to have people, like, once you get someone that you get along with and you have similar tastes and, you know, they're reliable and they can do good work, you just grab onto them. That's why you see, like, other directors doing that all the time. They always work with the same people again and again and again because they can count on them. And it's like you become a bit of a family and, yeah, there are many people I would love to just work with again and again and again because they get it and it's comforting and it's like you've been through this experience together and it's like a family.
We sort of touched on that. Every film that you've created, you know, maybe one's a horror, one's family, one's romance, but they all have comedic undertones. What do you enjoy most about writing and creating comedy in that way?
It's the laughing, I've got to say, because when you're making, like when we were doing the record with Martin Short, it was just, he's so funny. You're just laughing and laughing and laughing. It's just two solid days of you're just laughing. And it was the same thing with Locked in the Garage Band. We were on set, filming in Mission for 10 days. We just laughed so much. And it's just like a wonderful experience. I recommend it to everyone. If you want to do this, you should do it because it is so fun. And I've never done a drama, and I wonder if it would be the same thing, but for every experience I've had, it's just been wonderful.
You mentioned Mission, and as I mentioned before in the interview, I grew up in BC, Victoria, and Vancouver,
right.
And Mission, I love that town, I love that city, and people don't realize it's everywhere in film now.
I know.
Riverdale, Horns. What appealed to you about filming in Mission?
It has a good tax credit, and we were originally going to film in Vancouver, but it was so expensive to find locations and stuff, and Mission was just way cheaper and way more accommodating. Like, they were with permits and stuff, they just want you to come there. And, that's why we went there. It was great.
Well, the film is Elliot the Littlest Reindeer, and the special engagement is on the 29th, I do believe. Is that correct?
It's just in Canada, it's December 2nd.
Canada, December
This
2nd.
Sunday.
Perfect. Excellent. Well, Littlest Reindeer comes out December 2nd. I had a chance to check out the trailer. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing the full cut of the movie. Jennifer Westcott, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Dan.
Alrighty, have a good one. Cheers.
Okay, you too. Sorry, yeah, you too.
Bye.
Thank you much, Dan.
That was my conversation with filmmaker Jennifer Westcott. And now we're going to have a song from The Lucky Ones off of their album Better Late Than Never. This is Maddie's Gonna Play Pop Songs.
Maddie's gonna play pop songs. Punk rock, don't pay the bills, and it's gonna be a rock star. And hit on little girls. We couldn't afford him anymore. Couldn't buy him soju at the liquor store. So Maddie's gonna play pop songs. Punk rock, don't pay the bills. Maddie's gonna play pop songs. Punk rock, don't pay the bills, and it's gonna go big time. And get endorsed with deals. We couldn't afford him anymore. Couldn't buy a Ford from Singapore. So Maddie's gonna play pop songs.
That was Maddie's Gonna Play Pop Songs by The Lucky Ones off of their album Better Late Than Never. Well, The Lucky Ones are Steve Stumble, Robbie Knuckles, Chris the Doctor Nowicki, and Eric Hutt. The Maddie in that song refers to former drummer Matt Three-Pack Murphy. The Lucky Ones are a punk band from St. Catharines, Ontario. And their latest album is, as mentioned, Better Late Than Never. And I got a chance to speak with vocalist Steve Stumble a few weeks back about the new album. Here's me and Steve Stumble.
Alrighty.
Steve Stumble, hello. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here this evening.
Hey, Dan. How's it going?
Good. So, you guys have the new album out, Better Late Than Never. I take it the title's kind of tongue-in-cheek since you advertised that it took 5 years to make.
Yeah, well, we kind of just, I shouldn't say we were really on hiatus, it's just, it took forever to record, and it was kind of recorded at different times, and some of it was, cover songs, and it was a weird whole thing, and we just kind of compiled it all into one, and our bass player had three kids, and, a couple of guys in the band got married, and everything else, so it just took way longer than we ever expected for it to come out.
What did this process, I guess, the sort of the 5 years that it took, tell you about the art of sort of balancing your art and your passion with your everyday personal lives?
Yeah, well, we all, have full-time jobs and stuff, so it's become kind of more of a hobby for us than anything else these days, but we try to get out there as much as we can and play as, wherever, far away as we can and as close as we can, so Yeah, it's good. You know, like, all the guys in the band are married except for me, and, you know, Robbie has three kids, and, you know, have houses and jobs, and, you know, just shift work and stuff. It's just getting everybody on the same schedule. Just next to impossible these days. You figure it'd get easier as you get older, but it doesn't.
That's interesting you mention that, because, you know, when a lot of people think of, you know, touring musicians, they say, like, oh, that's all they do. And sure, for some of the bigger name artists it is, but for a lot of the smaller bands, this is, you guys have a regular life, as you said. So what do you think is the biggest misconception, not only of a touring band, but specifically a touring punk band?
Well, we basically have to have a job or you're going to be homeless. There's just not enough money to be made. You know, and I would say probably 95% of punk bands all have jobs and you know, do other things besides being in their band, or otherwise they're never going to survive, or, yeah, you'd have to be on the road, you know, full time all the time. And even that's hard to do.
Yeah. Now this album, Better Late Than Never, is interesting because you have two songs that feature Shohei Shirashi. How did, and I know, I think I read that you've worked with him before. How did that collaboration initially come about for you guys?
Oh, it's pretty cool. Like, our friend Mary from we're from St. Catharines, but she's from Niagara Falls, just down the street from us. And she was teaching English or whatever in Japan. So she became friends with the guys from Samurai Attack and Shohei, the drummer, and they were kind of dating for a while or whatever. And, you know, she came back home to Canada when her English teaching was up, and Shohei said he wanted to come visit. And he wanted to record a couple songs in Canada while I was here that Samurai Attack didn't want to do. So Mary's like, well, why don't you get the lucky one to do it? So we started chatting, and then, yeah, he came over here. We jammed once or twice and went in the studio and recorded two songs. It was pretty cool.
The other thing I'm really intrigued about is, how did old school punk rockers end up on Orphan Black?
Well, that's actually our bass player, Rob. Is a singer from his old band, Super Garage, Marco DeFelice. He works up in Toronto doing a bunch of music publishing stuff for placing songs and television shows and whatever. And every time we have something new, we send it to him, and he tries to find the stuff. And yeah, we ended up in the TV show Orphan Black, and we also ended up on the soundtrack of it as well. It's kind of cool. And, like, you know, Marcos put us on stuff like Lost Girl. We've had a couple songs in that. And we've been in some other movies and strange stuff too. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Does it feel weird for you in a sense, you know, because punk has always been, you know, the ethos of punk is anything but mainstream. And here you are on a mainstream Emmy-winning Canadian-American show. What do you think that the impact of that was for you guys, or the impact that it had on you?
Good question. No idea, really. No, it's weird. I get random messages there sometimes, say, oh, heard you guys on the whatever soundtrack. That's what led us to your site or whatever. And that's kind of cool. But overall, you know, I don't really hear a heck of a lot about it. But no, it's pretty cool. There's, you know, it's weird. We have a lot of neat bands on the soundtrack too, like Peaches and International Noise Conspiracy and all kinds of just really different stuff across the map. Like, really interesting soundtrack, really. And, yeah, it's just cool to be part of things that normally, you know, we wouldn't be a part of. I always like doing that. I like playing with bands we don't fit with either, you know. Like, we've had, like, our old drummer plays in USS, and, you know, we've opened for them and stuff, and we literally terrify their audience when we play with them and stuff. And I'm like, this is cool. These people are never going to come see us. You know, so it's just you play in front of people that wouldn't normally see you, which to me is always cool.
And I'm reading on your press release, and it says in about Ricky Joe's parking lot that some people might call it a bit juvenile, and I feel that's another stereotype that sort of, you know, these a lot of these punk bands get, that it's very party, it's very juvenile. is there, in what you guys do, is there, you know, a certain sense of, like, you know, party, fun, and a little bit of the juvenile sense of humor? And how do you mix that with the business of making music, would you say?
At this point, I have my own record label, so I can put out whatever the hell I want, so I don't really have any restrictions. I can just kind of record and write whatever we want, but yeah, there's some goofy songs and stuff. We get bad sense of humor songs, but there's some random serious stuff, too. None of it's meant to be taken overly seriously, you know, we're a good time band. We're playing shows and stuff. We don't want to come out and preach some kind of agenda or anything. We're just, you know, want everyone to have a good time.
And I know you guys have occasionally in the past, you've put it, taken the piss out of St. Catharines. What's the best and worst thing about living in a city like St. Catharines?
I don't know. I've grown up here my whole life, so I don't really know any different. The best. I don't know, we're kind of in, like, tourist area wine country stuff, so there's plenty of, like, you know, neat chef restaurants and wineries and stuff like that you can go to down here and stuff, but, you know, it's just an industry town that's past its prime. It's an old GM town, and it's, you know, kind of beat up. We're going through a whole new, you know, revitalization of the whole downtown core here, especially, you know, we got a new arena, a new performing arts center, and everything else, but, you know, there's still junkies running around the streets here all over the place. it's an interesting place. It's not a terrible place to be. Like, I mean, when you tour Canada, you hear everyone moves away from here and goes, oh, dang, there's some terrible, like Captain Sachs, blah, blah, blah. I mean, if you go tour Canada, you can play a lot of towns that are a hell of a lot worse than St. Catharines.
I went there once, and I went for a nice hike along the Welland Canal, so that's something, I guess.
Yeah, I'm literally, like, not even a block away from it right now.
well, there you go. You know, there's always the old adage, you know, whenever I talk to sort of bands from small towns, I'm always curious about the environment that you grew up in, how that maybe influenced your songwriting or your artistic sensibilities. Do you think St. Catharines played some sort of role in how you see yourself as an artist?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. The weird thing with, like, the Lucky Ones and my old band, the Sick Boys, I don't particularly think we kind of sound like anyone in particular. We kind of got our own, I don't know, Niagara sound almost. I don't know if that makes any sense, but, you know, we're influenced by a lot of Canadian punk music and British 77 kind of style punk rock. It's just, you know, we had, like, old bars at St. Catharines, like original punk bars, like Jerry's Alley and an old alternative club called Gord's Place and stuff. You know, where everyone just kind of hung out kind of thing. So, A lot of those places and growing up in that kind of atmosphere really had an influence on us.
I know you also had someone leave the band during this, Matt Murphy, I think, and you allude to it in the song "Maddie's Gonna Play Pop Songs." What is the experience like for you guys as a unit when somebody leaves that unit?
Oh, yeah, it kind of took forever to find a new drummer and get him to learn all the tunes. But, yeah, we were kind of bummed that left. We got it, you know. He got offered, like, a really legit gig, you know, playing drums for USS. So, you know, they were going to, you know, pay him per gig and everything else, and they were touring constantly and going all over the world. And, you know, we're just kind of doing our thing and not paying him any money. Anything we make in the band is either covers expenses or goes back into the band to record or pay for whatever else. So, yeah, like, he's an amazing drummer. Like, he's doing a professional job right now. We're just kind of do it as a hobby and have fun with it at this point.
How does he feel about this song that you've written about him?
It's pretty damn funny. Yeah, Maddie's gonna play pop songs because punk rock don't pay the bills.
Yeah. Speaking of writing, when you guys write songs, is there a specific method that you adhere to in terms of, you know, lyrics first, melody first, or is it a bit of a mishmash, anything goes?
Yeah, it's kind of a mishmash, anything goes. You know, sometimes Robbie has ideas for songs, and, you know, sometimes I got a chorus stuck in my head, and I'll just go to Robbie and we'll write around that, or there really is no recipe. It's just whatever works. Like, I know a lot of people said our song structures are really strange and weird because a lot of the times the songs are written around the lyrics instead of, you know, the music. So it kind of goes both ways. Either way, just depends on, you know, what we're working on at the time.
We mentioned earlier that you sort of make fun of St. Catharines, and I know the song and the album that alludes to that is Monday Night at Carlton Heights. What can you tell us about that track? What is the Carlton Heights? I imagine it's a bar or sort of live experience of some sort.
Yeah, it's just a local dive pub, kind of at the end of the street I live on, and I just tend to go there because it's close to home. And it's full of just a bunch of interesting characters, and, you know, there's all kinds of junkies and drug dealers and old drunks and just characters, you know, doing their thing, and it has its moments. That's about it. It's nothing really exciting.
Would you say you have a favorite song off of Better Late Than Never?
My favorite song is probably Old School Punk Rockers. I love that tune for some reason. I wrote it with my buddy Mike McNeil, who's living out in Fort McMurray these days. But yeah, it's that's probably my favorite on it.
Well, you guys have a few show dates coming up. I know next week you're going to be in Hamilton at This Ain't Hollywood, and then doing a hometown gig on the 24th at the Warehouse, and then you'll be here in the big city at Lee's Palace. You and I talked a little bit about how Lee's Palace is a great gig for a band like yours. What do you like most about coming to Toronto to play a show?
I don't usually like coming to Toronto to play shows. I like coming to Toronto to play shows when we're like on a supporting like a bigger, large act. I don't like going there and kind of doing our own gigs. I don't know why. It's just the way it is these days. I used to love going to Toronto and play those kind of things all the time, but these days it seems to be, you know, more quality over quantity. Lee's Palace is a great venue. We're doing all these shows with the Forgotten Rebels right now, which have been great. We just did, you know, Waterloo in London with them as well, and both shows were amazing. So I'm expecting all the rest of them to be just as good. You know, Hamilton, St. Catharines, and Toronto. St. Catharines has been crazy because we haven't played here in a year, so. Yeah, it'll be good times.
Well, the album is Better Late Than Never, and it's out now. And Steve and the rest of the gang at the Lucky Ones will be here in Toronto on December 7th. Steve Stumble, thanks so much for your time this evening, man.
Thanks so much, Dan. Have a good night, my friend.
Alrighty, cheers.
Cheers.
And that was my conversation with Steve Stumble of the Lucky Ones. Their album, Better Late Than Never, is out now. That does it for me today. Back to two shows next week. First one will have writer, director, or filmmaker Zach Birnbaum and music from Quarter Tank. And then on the weekend, I'm super excited. Slavoj Žižek, great philosopher, will be on the show, along with Svetlana Dvoretska, who talks about a great Russian dance and mime show. Clown show that's coming here to Toronto. So that's all coming up next week. We're going to take you out with the Lucky Ones, Ricky Joe's Parking Lot. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.
chose.